The Baptist church in Jerusalem was full ad ephes makom, as they say in Israel, to absence of place. All 50 seats were taken. The preacher was preaching the best he knew how, trying to meet the demands of the special occasion, the reorganization and rededication of the little Jerusalem congregation. As he waxed eloquent, so he thought perhaps, and made a statement which evidently did not fit the situation, or at least raised a question in the mind of one person present. About halfway back in this congregation, there stood up a little man right in the middle of that moment, and with the beard characteristic of Orthodox Jewish scholars, the little side curls down his cheeks in front of his ears, and the little skull cap on his head, he burst out with this question, "Lama," which means, "How come?" Well, I didn't know how come. If you've ever been completely knocked off your feet, you ought to have this happen to you sometime when you're preaching. And I said to him, the best I could, in very clumsy language, what I thought ought to be the answer to how come, and it was obviously not satisfactory. Because he asked me another question. And when I tried to answer that one, he asked me another question. And so on, until I had not only convinced him and myself, but everybody present that I didn't know how come. He was obviously a learned man and a kind and gentle man. He was not trying to start an argument. He was really seeking the answer to an honest question. And finally I said to him in desperation, "Sir, it's obvious that you are a very learned man," because he would quote the New Testament to me when it was convenient, and it depended on what language he'd studied a given book in as to which language he used to quote it, sometimes French, sometimes German, sometimes Hebrew. Then in desperation I said to him, "Sir, I can see that you are a learned man and that you really want to know the answer to these questions. If you will kindly permit me to finish the little message and then join me in the mission house next door, I'll be glad to talk with you at any length, and some of the others present will, and we'll be happy to tell you what we know about Jesus firsthand." And he almost jumped over the seat. He clapped his hands and a light came to his face and his eyes, and he said, "That's what I came here to find out in the first place. What can you tell me about Jesus? What do you know?" Well, he came in the house next door, and he came back many times during this last year, and I hope is still coming back and asking questions and talking with the missionaries, because I think he's an honest seeker after the truth. But this experience shook me, as you can very well understand, to my very foundations. And I've never since that time, a few months ago, tried to speak anywhere under any set of circumstances where I was not really afraid to open my mouth. Not because I'm ashamed or afraid to say what I think I know and feel and see, but because I have understood anew the awesomeness of the responsibility of the preacher as he stands before his church, his congregation, his little group maybe, or even one individual. Because what we are really about is trying to tell people something in the affirmative. Trying to tell them about something which has happened to us. And this is really a basic assumption, isn't it, of the whole Christian gospel. The simple assumption that something has happened in and for me, and that this thing is of God, and further, that God wants and wills that this same thing shall happen in every other person in all of his universe. Now, if this is the basic assumption, and it is as far as I'm concerned, then it has to come from firsthand experience. Learning and oratory are just fine. Every message delivered ought to be based on the soundest possible investigation, on the best possible learning. It ought to be presented in as fine a manner as possible. But learning and oratory alone are not the answers to the demands of the Christian message. It has to be something out of the wellspring of the being, out of the experience of the person with God in Jesus Christ. In the preparation of a minister or a preacher or a missionary or a teacher or any other responsible person, dialogue and debate and hard study and discussion are essential factors. They are necessary in their setting. But before our congregations and people to whom we're trying to give this gospel of redemption, our task is slightly different from what it is here in the classroom or in our discussion sessions or in our debates or dialogues. People generally intuit genuineness. When I go or you go to some congregation or some place to deliver a message, the gospel message, most of the people present will intuit whether or not we're speaking out of our own experience and have personal experience to confirm and back up the claims we make for the gospel. This is absolutely necessary, in my opinion. In the beginning days of the Christian faith, the followers of Jesus had a very simple message based on two strong beliefs, two convictions. One, that the crucified Christ had risen in resurrection power. This is obvious when one studies the New Testament. The other conviction they had was that this resurrection power had been given to them in the Pentecost experience. And it was thus in this power and on the strength of this experience which they shared that they went out to win the world. And so this became their gospel. And our gospel must also be based in our experience, and we must be equally convinced and convicted of the truth of the gospel claims. Otherwise, we have no gospel. Because our real business, in the final analysis, is to tell people the old, old story, the wonderful story of God's redemptive work in Jesus Christ. And somehow or other, we must submit ourselves so completely to His hands, to His purpose, that He will be able to fulfill this task through us. I'm reminded of a very funny little story which Professor John Durham told me about a young friend of his down near Wallace, North Carolina, a little boy, some 3 or 4 or 5 years old. He'd been out playing, as most little boys that size like to play, in a mud puddle. Finally, his mother saw him, and she was consternated because she was very fastidious. So she called him in quickly and remonstrated with him and said, "Here you are, all muddy and messed up," and he looked down at himself. And she said, "Just look at you, mud everywhere and a mess everywhere and germs all over you." Well, he was sufficiently scolded and dropped his head and started away to the bath. And then as he went away, his mother heard him say, "Germs and Jesus, germs and Jesus. That's all I hear, and I never have seen either one." Well, that is a funny story, and I laughed heartily at that story, and then I started to think, well, maybe this is a child's prophecy. Really? And maybe it's his mother's fault and John's and mine and yours that he's had such a hard time ever really seeing Jesus. Because however trite and childlike it may seem to you, and however unsophisticated it may be for this given setting here, that's essentially what we're about, trying to help people see Jesus Christ. Paul talks about your gospel. Your gospel. And I ask myself, do you really have a gospel? And I ask you, do you really have a gospel? We're going to stand and sing hymn numbered 440.